Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
The show that takes you home. The Home Stretch with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Welcome to the Home Stretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, and Facebook Live, live in studio on a, cloudy, humid, muggy, but slightly cooler Wednesday afternoon. Rudy Salazar behind the glass. Rudy, how are you?
It's been a day. When I found out last night about 7 o'clock that I had one completely flat tire and another tire with a slow leak, so I got that taken care of today.
Oh, you just had a flat tire where you had to stay at the station. By the
so that wasn't a flat tire. That was, my water tank had a crack in it, so the coolant wasn't staying in it. Little run of bad car luck. Because then last week, as I was driving, and this is not like this nothing imperative from this, but as I'm driving, I just all of a sudden see out of the corner of my eye this little thing coming across my windshield. As I just watch a crack slowly go across about halfway, across. I'm like,
you and I could combine cars and maybe have one good, reliable car.
Having some bad car luck lately. For a car that I've generally never had a lot of issues with, in the last 2 months, I've had multiple, problems. Now, tires is not really the car's fault. It's just
Have we thought about throwing my Wrangler tires on your car? And just see what happens. I feel like there's no way goes wrong.
It's obviously better than what I had on yesterday.
I also still have a cracked windshield, so we don't really solve that issue.
The tire, too, this thing was stuck on there. Because I don't know the last time I've had to, change. It's been a while since I've had to change tires.
So those nuts are
So,
crusty.
The lug nuts came off pretty easily.
Oh, okay.
But then getting the actual tire off of the I don't know what you
wheel
call.
Bearing
yeah the wheel
the
bearing.
Axle
yes.
axle maybe
axle. That's yeah, the word yes getting the wheel off the axle, man, it was stuck. And so I'm like, daddy, I call my dad, I was like, you have any tips for this? And he's like, yeah, you gotta kick it. He's like, you go to a when you go to shops or whatever, you'll see them, they've got sledgehammers that they'll
oh yeah
on. And so I'm just kicking it on the side. He's like just get on the ground, kick it on each side, and it's just nothing. So I'm like, after a while, because it's hot, I'm tired, I'm covered in just dirt, and I'm just like,
please tell me you stayed at the station again.
For a split second, I thought I might have to, and I finally just said, bleep it, and I got equal with it, and just kicked it with both feet head on. The car shook on the jack, and I thought it might come down. Now I would have been fine.
Did you fall? I'm picturing a Jackie Chan leaping. Two-footed kick at it. That's what I'm picturing in my head.
Think that, but without the leaping part. I was firmly on the ground, but kicking.
Didn't you
in
fall?
That action. No, I sat down on the ground first.
Okay.
So, to get leverage.
So you're getting leverage. It's a squat.
Yeah,
you're doing a squat.
Yeah. So imagine that form, the double-kicked form, but lay it on the ground, right? So it looks like that, just no jumping or air.
Sure, ball. I get it, yeah.
And I finally just head-on kick it with both feet, and on the second kick, I heard it slash saw it dislodge. I'm like, finally, so I was able to get it off, get the spare on, and get home.
I'm going to go ahead and still picture you as doing a Jackie Chan kick, because that's
way
tighter. That's way more fun.
And then, of course, the spare, because the last couple times I've had to change my tires because I had a flat or whatever. It was such a slow leak that I was able to fill it up and then drive to where I needed to get to. I don't know if the spare tire's actually ever been used. So it was low on air from natural air loss, over the course of the years. But fortunately, I was able to get over a Quick Trip and get it, filled up and get home. Going down the highway, because I have to get on the highway to get home, going 50 miles an hour. Because
you can't go over 50.
You're not supposed to go over 50. Yeah. And then the way back, at night's not a big deal. There's not a lot of cars.
Sure.
Way up back, a lot of cars passing me. I'm just like, I'm sorry, guys. I'm that jackhole driving.
Is it still a donut on there? Do you still have the donut?
No, I got it into Big O Tires this morning.
I like Big O Tires.
Yeah, and they hooked me up good, so I got 4 new tires. The worst part is like I knew I needed new tires, and I thought about getting new tires on Monday.
Well,
like,
why the way do my, today what you can do tomorrow?
My schedule worked out to where I was like, you know what, I can probably do it on Monday. And then I was like, you know what, let's just wait till the weekend. So I was going to get new tires this weekend, and then, you know, that happened.
Max Reaper joining us at 3:15. We're going to talk some Royals, break down last night's game. The Royals actually were in...
functioning better than my car lately.
They're functioning like a BMW right now. They look good. They're fun. They're entertaining. They could be 36 years old, like
Bobby
Carlos Santana's, and
Bobby
he's doing well. Yeah, Bobby Witt Jr., we're hashtag witness greatness.
He's on a nice run. Buster only tweeted out like the numbers that he's on pace for, and like especially after the
absurd
slow start. I forget all of them that's on my head, but you know it's 20 plus home runs, and then somebody like replied to that being like, well, if he just keeps up, not even his full season pace, but doing what he's been doing for the last like 6 weeks or something
sure
like that, then it's approaching 30 home runs.
Yeah.
And it's like if he keeps his current pace, and here's the thing: there's no reason to believe that he can't maintain what he's doing, and also there's also no reason to believe that he won't
get better
because
yeah
he's a rookie.
I mean, it's insane. And his swing, I'm going to talk to Max about this more, but his swing looks so Mike Trout-esque. I'm not saying he's Mike Trout. No one is Mike Trout.
Except for maybe Bobby Witt Jr.
So, no, pump the brakes.
Yeah. No,
you got too much dip on your chip right there. Hold on. No one's Mike Trout. But the Mike Trout is Mike Trout. And apparently Shohei Ohtani is also Babe Ruth / Mike Trout. If Babe Ruth was mixed with Mike Trout, that's Shohei Ohtani. By the way, no, you know what? I'm going to wait for Max because how much Royals can we talk? I will say this is the most fun I've had talking Royals in a while now. My dad was even at the game last night. My dad was at the game. And by the way, they have the dugouts wrong in Anaheim. Why are the Royals on the first base side? Riddle me this. Home team should be first base side.
Yeah, I'm sure there's it's just like there's some sort of design to the stadium that makes it beneficial for them. Like it's just closer to their locker room, I guess.
Or the lights just destroy whoever's on the first base side at night and they don't want to do it.
That could very well be what it is. That's interesting. I never fully – I mean, I've watched – countless Angels game, yo, Angels versus Royals games, and just like never fully put together. Oh yeah, they're on a different side.
I also got into a cookie debate on Twitter last night, which didn't think that was going to happen. What do you think of this? Derek Jeter is the chocolate chip of cookies. It's good, right? But overrated. I feel like that's the best comparison you can make for Derek Jeter. He is a
I really like chocolate chip cookies, though.
Sure, really good, right? It's overrated.
I don't know if they're overrated. It's a
really
good cookie.
Should be a Hall of Famer, right? Chocolate chips in the Hall of Fame. But is it number one? No, it's not. Don't lie to yourself. No one has ever been like, chocolate chip is the best cookie ever. If you do, you're boring. You're basically saying vanilla ice cream is the best ice cream out there. You're wrong.
Some people really like vanilla ice cream.
Well, they're wrong.
I'm a strawberry guy.
At least get crazy over there.
I like strawberry.
How many people have you killed?
I'm a big like the flavor, like strawberry flavoring is a big fan.
I get that. I like strawberry, but top. That's a serial killer move.
Wow.
Oh. That's scary.
Strawberries and ice cream is great.
My shirt looks like strawberry colored right now because on Wednesdays we wear pink. Mean Girls reference. Snickerdoodle is the best cookie. Don't you dare come at me with any other cookie.
Favorite.
You're wrong. Snickerdoodle is the best cookie. It's underrated. No one ever thinks about it as the first cookie. And you take
it's
one.
Good.
You take one bite of a Snickerdoodle. Game over. It's top tier.
I mean, like, so we actually talked about this with David Leske last night.
I know. This is how it started.
Yeah, okay,
it was you, Leske, and Briscoe.
Like
I figured you'd pick up. Do you think I was... Wait, time out.
I thought there was a
cookie conversation on Twitter
I thought there was
that
a chance
was not involving the That
because
one.
As we're doing this conversation, or, you know, last night, Soren on his podcast, his live show, was talking about Triscuits. And obviously, Triscuits, crackers and cookies are different, but they're also in that, you find them in the same aisle frequently, right? So it's just like the fact that, like, also somebody else at the same time as we're talking cookies, they're talking crackers. It wouldn't surprise me if you were also talking, like,
just getting
thing,
on
man,
a
we all hang
Kansas
out
Kansas City wide.
We all hang out with each other way too much, is the point here. And
yeah, it is.
We start all talking about similar things at the same times without even realizing it. It happens more often than you think.
Yeah. It started off with oatmeal raisin.
Oh, but anyways, yeah, Leski's point, no cookies. There's no such thing as a bad cookie, really, right? Like, a bad cookie's still a pretty good cookie.
Mm.
It's, you know what I mean? Like, now, on the spectrum of the cookies, you know, the cookie scale, which is different, right? Like, you know, there's obviously great to bad, but a bad cookie generally is still, you know, pretty good compared to the majority of things that you can eat.
Where did you land on oatmeal raisin?
I'm a big oatmeal raisin.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
I think it is the thing that everybody's like, for whatever reason, for the longest time, it was just like, oh, you can't like oatmeal raisin, or yeah,
it's the Nickelback of cookies.
It's
people
great.
Like to hate on it because it's easy to hate on. But then you know what? If an oatmeal raisin cookie's out there, you're grabbing it.
I'm a big fan of oatmeal raisin cookies.
If a Nickelback song
like
comes
raisins.
On, me too. But if
raisins
a Nickelback song comes on, what are you doing? You're singing it.
Yeah, like raisins get a bad, you know, a bad rap, and I assume some of that stems from like childhood. Like, I don't know. I guess you think they look weird. I don't fully know. I love raisins.
On Facebook Live, someone goes, Carlos Santana is the Oreos of cookies. Half the time it's good, half the time it's horrible. You got to have the milk though to dunk it in. That's what he said.
I'm not bad. I'm not a milk guy.
Me either. I'm not a milk guy either. You and I agree way too much in cookies right now, and I don't like this.
The way to go with Oreos is the thin ones that are like they're a bit thinner, so that it's almost feels like you're eating a chip. But I'm a big fan of the lemon flavored ones.
That sounds like someone just left the Oreos outside too long,
they're
and they
so
got
so good. Lemon flavor. The lemon flavored Oreos are so good.
Do you also like chunky lemon milk?
I mean, it doesn't taste like milk at all. I mean, I don't dump it in milk. There's no milk involved. It's just a lemon lemon inside instead of a vanilla or whatever.
I like the Oreos.
What's the one?
Aren't those the?
Are those the reverse or?
No, I thought those were the, golden Oreos. Were they the?
Oh, where it's the vanilla wafer.
Those are good.
Yeah, dude. So the lemon. And so the lemon one, you get a vanilla wafer, but with the, you know, a lemon flavoring on the inside.
By the way, Linzer cookies might be the best cookies ever. The ones with the raspberry filling and their powdered sugar on top. If you dislike those, you're a liar. You're a liar. Those are so good.
It's hard to find a bad, like just a bad cookie.
Yeah, we haven't found one cookie we've talked about. I'm going to look up one cookie I dislike in the break, and then
like,
we'll come back.
And right, like you can find cookies that you like, again, as far as cookies go, right?
I'm not talking about like your friend who burns the bleep out of a cookie and then tries to serve it to you. No. We're talking like actual cookie like, that's a good cookie.
And my guess is like a cookie that you don't like is
Cookie
still,
Rojas.
You would still be like
Team Cookie Rojas.
You would still be like, oh, that's a pretty good, you know what I mean? It's still in terms of taste, it's still pretty good. It's just you know, on the lower end of the cookie scale. Which is just, you know, it's a different scale.
Let's take a break, come back and actually talk Royals and sports instead of cookies, even though I do want to ask Max Reaper what his favorite cookie is, because you know. He probably saw what was happening on Twitter. He's from the editor-in-chief of Royals Review, talking Royals, the homestretch here, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the homestretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com and Facebook Live. It was a Bobby bomb last night. Not one, but two. Good song to come back to this, Rudy. I like that, just so I can make a Bobby bomb reference.
I didn't plan on it, but it works out perfect.
That was perfect. You know what else is perfect? Joining now, Max Reaper, editor-in-chief of Royals Review. Max, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a little tired staying up late last night, but the Lucy Royals made it well worth my time. It's an exciting win, and you're right, some Bobby bombs that make the game a little more thrilling than usual.
I'll tell you what, full transparency, I fell asleep after 9. So I watched the full 9, and I go, man, I just can't swing it. My dad was actually at the game in Anaheim. He was staying 2 hours away, but he was like, I want to go see the Royals play. I want to go see Shohei, and he was in for an absolute show. That game was nuts. Ohtani, 2 home runs. Bobby Witt, 2 home runs. Heasley looked good for 5 innings. what a fun game just to see. Is this a step in the right direction as a whole for the Royals? Is this a microcosm of what fans can come to expect, the young guys doing some of the little things? The starting pitcher, even though the bullpen was horrendous, starting pitching was pretty dang good for five innings. Or was this more of a one-off?
Yeah, well, they've had a pretty good road trip here. They're going to have a winning road trip, which I think is pretty amazing considering where they've been this year. And so I think, you know, for all the doom and gloom this season, you can kind of squint and see like the beginnings of perhaps the light at the end of the tunnel with Bobby Witt Jr. really turning into the Bobby Witt Jr. we were expecting when the season began. We knew it would take some time, but I think what was most impressive about last night is that, you know, he got down on the count 0-2 in that first at bat. And I think, you know, back in April, he would have expanded his strike zone a little too much, maybe chased a pitch out of the zone, a slider off the corner or something like that. Instead, he kind of is much more patient, works Reed Detmers a little bit, then gets a pitch he can handle, and really didn't seem like he hit it that hard, but was able to smack it 400 feet the other way for a home run. And then, you know, his other hits, too, were the right center field, which to me, really impressive. We knew he had the strong wrist, the bat strength, or the bat speed, and to get to kind of have that kind of opposite field power. But to see him kind of work the count and use the whole plate like that, really impressive to see. And, you know, to go with that and his, you know, league leading sprint speed, and of course the defense at short, which we're now seeing, I think it's really exciting for Royals fans to see. And now we're also seeing MJ Melendez and, like I said, Jonathan Heasley, who, you know, this is like the fifth start in a row now. He's really looked pretty solid. I know he kind of fell apart there at the end, but like I said, you're starting to see, you know, the whole package doesn't come together. I mean, we're still a long way from that, but you can kind of at least imagine what a good Royals team might look like. And then it may not be, you know, right around the corner or anything like that, but at least we can start seeing some guys that may be part of that future. Now, there aren't enough of those guys yet, but it's certainly encouraging to see Bobby Witt become the player we think he can become. Jonathan Heasley step up, and you know, Daniel Lynch looked pretty good in his outing the other day. So there are some guys that are taking a step forward. We just need to see more of them.
Yeah, the development of Bobby Witt Jr. has obviously been noticeable, but going to opposite field, hitting a home run two home runs to right center, that to me is massive. He's not Mike Trout. I do not want to get ahead of myself. I don't want anyone here, any Royals fans, being like, well, that's so Mike Trout. But some aspects of his game remind you of what Mike Trout is, right? That swing, taking an inside fastball and taking it to right center. Not many players in Major League Baseball can do that. When you pair that with a top-end speed, with the elite defense, do the Royals truly think that this is going to be an absolute game-changing player, not just an Alex Gordon, right? Alex Gordon was great for the franchise of Kansas City, but he wasn't Mike Trout. Not saying Bobby's going to be Mike Trout, but if he can be that, let's say, Juan Soto, right? The Ronald Acuna Jr., the guy just underneath, is that where you think Bobby Witt Jr. is heading?
Yeah, I still think probably still a little too early to tell, but he certainly has the loud tools that are capable of doing that, right? So the power, which we always knew was there, but it might take some time to develop. I think it's actually probably progressed a little bit faster than I expected. I think he's on pace now to hit like 24, 25 home runs, which for a rookie, that's outstanding. And to couple that with, you know, 20, 25 stolen bases, which he's also on pace to do, like I said, that speed power combo is very rare to find, and that's kind of like the next level kind of player. Now, the one thing he is kind of missing that Mike Trout has, a lot of the superstars that Juan Soto certainly has, it is the ability to draw lots of walks, and that kind of takes some time to develop. Mike Trout in his very first year, when he had about 150 plate appearances, you know, didn't have a great walk rate either. It was kind of his second or third year he really developed that, and Bobby Witt has gotten a little bit better at that in the last month. He certainly cut down on his strike zones or strikeouts, which is really nice to see. He's not chasing as much. Certainly making much more contact. So, you know, we'll see. We'll keep our eye on that, because that's kind of, you know, when you talk about the super-duper stars, they're guys that have power, have speed, draw tons of walks, play great defense. That's the whole package. And that's what I think we want out of Bobby Witt Jr. But even if he's just a really good player who's, you know, 20, 30, a 20-20 guy, 30-30 guy, that's pretty darn close to superstar. And you know, that's the kind of player that I think the Royals are kind of counting on. And it's going to be nice to have that at shortstop of all positions, a position that the Royals have never really had an offensive force, and to get a player that not only is a great offensive weapon but also fields his position really, really well, that's just a huge plus, and that's going to allow them to frankly, you know, paper over some other holes in the lineup, just having a player like that in the lineup.
Not hitting that shortstop, do you forget about the 1 year of Angel Barroa, and do you forget about the, what, year and a half of Mike Avilas? Come on now.
I don't want to say any Angel Barroa erasure, so I'll grant you that, but it's been a position that's been lacking for much of this franchise history.
MJ Melendez has struggled with the bat recently, but he's still taking a lot of walks, getting on base. How big is this for his future, knowing that when he bottoms out, when he's going through a slump, he still knows how to get on base? And do you think part of that comes with the recent overhaul in the minor league philosophy? You know how they changed the batting philosophy a few years ago, and that COVID was the COVID shortened season, the one that was canceled. Is this a minor league adjustment that we're seeing play out in the majors, or is MJ Melendez just different?
No, I think it could be that. I think you know, Dayton Moore several years ago kind of talked about the ability to draw walks as kind of something that the Royals wouldn't be able to afford on the free agent market, which, you know, I think there's some truth to that, but also there are some guys out there you can find at a bargain. But either way, you know, I think they perhaps have maybe stressed that a little bit more in their development of younger players. And so it's not just MJ Melendez, but I think Nick Prado and Vinny Pascantino, I think you say, are also both guys that have a pretty good eye, aren't going to chase a lot. They're going to work the count and draw walks. And so I think it is kind of a concerted effort by the Royals to kind of develop that as a skill. And you're right, it is great to see, even when you're not necessarily hitting the ball all the time, to still help your team by drawing those walks. And I think that has been perhaps the most impressive part of his game. He just takes a really mature approach to the play. He's not up there hacking. He's not up there guessing. He's working the count, and he's finding his pitch. And, you know, even against left-handers, which has been also really surprising, and he's handled lefties really well. With last week, he had a really impressive home run off with a lefty up in Oakland, where, you know, he's not a guy that's going to be overmatched by southpaws like a lot of young left-handed hitters are. So I'm really impressed with his approach. I hope that's part of the development that they are kind of stressing with these players, because we need guys in the lineup that can work a count a little bit. It certainly hasn't been a forte of the Royals over the years. It'd be nice to have a couple guys like that, and especially if Bobby Witt Jr. also becomes that guy, because pitchers are maybe a little afraid to kind of work him aggressively. It'd be nice to have a couple guys in that lineup that can get on base on a regular basis and clog the base paths with some runners there.
Max Reaper, editor-in-chief of Royals Review, joining us right here on the Homestretch ESPN Kansas City. So Heasley looked good last night up until that sixth inning, right? Those first five, he looked extremely crisp. Even the home run he gave up to Jared Walsh, I'm sitting here going, you have a five-run lead, that's fine. You know, no need to completely nibble. But he was hitting his spots all night long. The umpire was a little inconsistent, to put it mildly. But yeah, he, that outside fastball, it seemed like he could throw it almost at will. What did you make of his start as a whole? Did you agree with Mike Matheny to leave him in even after he walked the first two batters in the sixth? And what happens to him when Zach Greinke potentially gets called back up?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting decision they have to make, because Chris Bubich, I would think, would be the odd man out, but he looked, you know, pretty solid in his start this week as well. So, you know, my guess is Bubich would be the guy that ends up going to the bullpen, or maybe they send him to Omaha because they want to keep him as a starter. But, yeah, that would be a really interesting decision. But yeah, Heasley, yeah, you're right. The first five innings looked very sharp and throwing strikes, and that's kind of been his Achilles heel in his first couple starts. His last four or five starts, he's been, you know, much better at throwing strikes, and really, you know, frankly, the entire rotation has been a little bit better about throwing strikes on this road trip, I think, which is, I think, a big reason why they've been a lot more successful recently. But yeah, I think there's a lot to like about Heasley. His fastball, I think, is pretty good. What really impresses me from him is his changeup. I think his changeup has a lot of good downward action and a lot of sink to it. When it's on, I think it's getting a lot of swing and miss, which he was getting last night. So I think that, you know, a guy that has a repertoire like his, where he's got a good four-pitch mix, and if he's throwing strikes, I think he's going to be a very solid pitcher. I think, you know, we saw in the sixth inning when he is not hitting his spots, he's going to have a bad time. As far as leaving in the sixth inning, it's debatable. I was kind of debating with David Lesky about this. He thinks that it was pretty defensible to leave Heasley in there. I think once you hit the third time through the lineup, especially some of these young pitchers, you should probably start getting the guy at least loose and ready. But that, like I said, it was a five-run lead at that point. He had been cruising. It's not the worst decision in the world by Mike Matheny, but, you know, once you walk a guy, you really start need to to start thinking about getting the guy ready to face the heart of the lineup. You know, you really don't want to tire Jonathan Heasley facing Shohei Ohtani the third time through the lineup with a couple runners on base. So that's something you want to avoid. But overall, I think there's a lot to take away from that Heasley start that was positive. And I think he's been really impressive the last four or five times out.
It's tough to fault Matheny when you look into the bullpen, and then once you see what they did the rest of the game, you're like, well, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Not a very good option to go to. I want to ask you, though, so with Greinke coming back up, at least eventually, is there any chance the Royals go to a six-man rotation?
Yeah, I was thinking that, too, but this week the Major League Baseball kind of put the clamps down on roster limits, so they're stuck with 13 pitchers, which Mike Matheny expressed his displeasure about, something that the baseball has wanted to try to do since 2020. They want to limit this parade of relievers and parade of pitchers that comes through games by saying, okay, you can't have any more than 13 pitchers on a roster. Now COVID made them delay that until now. So this week it finally goes into effect. So because of that, I don't think you can really afford to carry a six-man rotation. And so I don't expect them to do that. You know, whether or not you use Bubic as a long man, which, you know, maybe that would have helped, you're not using this parade of relievers, because it does seem like they're working some guys quite a bit. And that's part of why I think Lesky thought it was more defensible to leave Heasley in, because you want to get an extra inning out of him, save your bullpen a little bit, because they have been using him a lot lately. They have this roster limit now that's going to, prevent them from just adding a lot of relievers. So I get that a little bit, but I don't know. I still think Bubic is probably the odd man out. It's just kind of going to be up to, whether or not they want to see him as a long man in the bullpen or if they want him in Omaha getting starts.
Hunter Dozier has been really solid all season long, but no one seems to be talking about him. No one said a word. Where does he fit in as far as the future is concerned? Because if he does this to me seems like a piece that you could use, whether it's a bench bat, whether it's just a guy who can give someone a day off at first, third. He can play the corner outfields, obviously not extremely well, but you can still put him out there. Where does he fit in?
Yeah, and you have to wonder a little bit if they regret a little bit kind of committing to him at that long-term deal. Not that he's been bad. I mean, he's actually been pretty good, like you said. An above-average league bat, above-league-average bat, who has been actually very high average this year. Not a ton of power, not drawing a ton of walks, but certainly he's hitting enough to be a weapon in that lineup. But, yeah, he's an odd fit with this lineup. I mean, you've got MJ Melendez is looking pretty good in right. I don't know if that's his future. I kind of lean towards him sticking out there just because, A, you've got Salvi already behind the plate, and, B, he looks pretty good in right field and might be a better hitter if he's not forced to sit behind the plate on a regular basis. You've got, Nick at first and Vinny Pascantino at first. Now Prada can move to the outfield. Pascantino can play DH a little bit. But then where do you put Hunter? How does Hunter Dozier fit in all that? I don't think they're going to put him back at third. And then if he's not going to play first base or right, that kind of sticks him at DH, which, he'd be an okay DH if he continues to hit like this, but I don't know if that's where they want to, clog the DH position with him. I'm sure they'd probably like to use him as trade bait. I don't know if there's a big market for his services. But it is, if he's going to be on this roster, it's nice to see him kind of put last year's dismal performance behind him. I think we can see that it probably was a thumb injury he was working through last year, which worries me a little bit with Salvi kind of trying to play through his thumb injury. Yeah. Like, if these guys are hurt, maybe they should just take a break for a little bit, let their thumb heal. It's nice to see him get his career back on track. He's a really easy guy to root for. He seems like a really good dude. He's taken kind of a while to kind of reach reach the big leagues and kind of become an established player. And, the Royals, they did commit to this contract with him. So you kind of like to see him hit. Where he fits in this lineup, they'll have to determine that, because he's kind of an odd fit right now with what they have.
Yeah, thumb injuries seem to be going around, because I have one too. I don't know what's going on. So the
Are
water
you day-to-day as well?
I'm day-to-day. I made it into work today, surprisingly. I know, it was tough. It hurts my voice trying to talk with my thumb. Luckily, it's my left thumb, though, right? So it's not at least on my throwing hand.
You and Salvi are the two toughest guys in sports, man.
Man, Iron Man over here. I don't know, man. I've missed like three straight Fridays. I'm going to miss this Friday, too. I got a bachelor party. It's not my fault, Max, okay? Tell my boss I'm sick, but, It's going to be a bachelor party. Salvador Perez, where do you have his injury at? What is going on here? Does he just need to go on the 10-15-day DL? Does he need to take some time off? Or just knowing him, is he going to continuously try and fight through this?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Salvi's own worst enemy is himself. I mean, the guy just doesn't want to get pulled out of the lineup, which I get, and that's part of why he's great, right? He's a gamer. He's going to play through anything. But at some point, you know, the adults in the room have to step forward and say, like, you know, Salvi, take a day off, please. Rest that thumb a little bit. I think it's easier for him to take a day off, too, now that you have MJ Melendez, who can go behind the plate and can be a solid weapon for you. So I'm all for resting Salvi at this point in his career. Especially, you know, it's a lost season. Like, you don't need to, you know, push things to the limit, you know. Like, they're in last place. They're not going to contend this year. If they're in the heat of a pennant race, you know, yeah, maybe Salvi should be trying to play through it. But in this kind of situation, man, you got to think long term. You want Salvi to be a productive hitter for the next couple of years. And, you know, I don't think a thumb injury is necessarily going to jeopardize that. But why take any chances, right? You don't want him, you know, Hunter Dozier developed bad habits from his thumb injury last year. You don't want Salvi developing bad habits. You want him to be a productive hitter. So take the time off, man. Just sit. Let MJ Melendez catch. Let Kyle Isbell get some starts and right and see what you have. I mean, injuries, you don't like want to see them happen, but in a way they're kind of an opportunity for younger guys to step up and show what they can do. So I'm all for resting Salvi as much as you can in a year like this.
I have no idea what you mean. The Royals are not in contention the rest of the season. Come on, they're only 17 games under .500. You're telling me they can't go on a 17-game win streak right now? Come on, Max.
Everyone's contending in the AL Central. It's not a good division at all. So.
Keep the faith over here. It's possible. No, I'm just kidding. They're out. Who would the Royals All-Star be?
That's a good question. You kind of feel like Salvi, just kind of reputation alone, sentimentality. You know, he still leads all American League catchers with home runs. You still think he'd be a pretty good candidate to go. I know he's not having his typical Salvi year, but I feel like he'd still be the odds-on favorite. I think Andrew Benintendi would probably be the next candidate you look at. His numbers aren't great, but the outfield crop in the American League isn't super deep, and he's having a solid season. I mean, certainly, I think, you know, worthy of some acclaim this year. So I think those are your two most likely options. It'd be great if Bobby Witt Jr. kind of went on a tear here in the next couple weeks, got some attention. Yeah, problem is, you know, I think he's listed at third on the ballot, or maybe he's listed at short, I can't remember. But in either case, shortstop's kind of a little more stacked in the American League, a little bit harder to get through. He's not even the best American League rookie shortstop this year, with Jeremy Pena and Houston playing so well. So, you know, and his day will come. Look, you know, he's going to be, I think we're going to see several All-Star games in his career before it's all said and done. So I would say Salvi is your most likely bet, with perhaps maybe Benintendi. But you never know. Maybe it'll be a Mark Redman year where, like, you know, some, you know,
Dylan Coleman.
Yeah, Dylan Coleman. Yeah.
Hey, if Aaron Crow made one, come on now.
That's right. All-Star Aaron Crow, man.
Max Reaper, editor-in-chief of Royals Review, joining us right here on the home stretch, ESPN Kansas City. Going back to Andrew Benintendi. He's had a really solid season, kind of under the radar because he doesn't have a ton of power, right? Only 3 home runs, 25 RBIs, OPS plus, though, of 115. It's tough to say. He's a gold glover, right? Not the best defensive outfielder by any means, but there's not many great defensive outfielders in left field. We just got spoiled with Alex Gordon. Wins above replacement, 1.6. He's been a very valuable piece to Kansas City. What do you do with him? Do you look at re-signing him? Do you look at trading him? What do you think the Royals' game plan is with Andrew Benintendi?
Well, why not both? I mean, you could certainly trade him in July and try to re-sign him when he's a free agent this winter. If you feel like you know, you still have a hole in left field and he's amenable to coming back to Kansas City. Now, of course, you take your chances. You know, he's going to be on the open market, but I don't think there's a long-term deal in the cards this season. So I think you're better off going through and trading him to a contender in July, and I think there's going to be a very robust market for him. Atlanta's looking for a left-handed bat. The Marlins are looking for an outfielder. The Cardinals are looking for an outfielder. The Blue Jays, I think, are looking for an outfielder. So there's going to be some suitors for him, and he's a solid player. He does a little bit of everything well. Gold Glover and left, and yeah, he's pretty solid out there. Not a great arm, but certainly can cover some ground. Certainly not going to embarrass himself out in left field. Get on base a little bit. He has some modest gap power. is a very solid hitter. So I think he's got a guy that slots in with a lot of teams at the top of their lineup. He's a young player, so you don't feel like you're getting a guy at the end of his career. So he's going to have some suitors out there. I think you can get a couple of good prospects for him. Not great elite prospects, but certainly, you know, one or two guys in the top 10 of an organization. I think that's in play with a guy like Andrew Benintendi. So I think it makes a lot of sense to go and trade him. And then if you want to go pursue him this offseason, I think the Royals have some financial flexibility. I think they can go make a decent offer for Benintendi and try to bring him back to Kansas City. And, you know, maybe because he is familiar with the team, familiar with the coaching staff already, maybe he'd feel comfortable coming back. You know, it has happened before. So, but yeah, I think they need to turn into some of this. The season is going nowhere, sorry, but the Royals aren't going to be contending. And if the Royals can and add a young prospect or two that sets them up in a better position for 2023 or 2024, then I think it makes all the sense to do that.
Yeah, I like that idea more than just saying trade him and we don't think about it, because I'm a huge Andrew Benintendi supporter over here. I would love to see a long-term deal or at least a 3-4-plus-year deal here in Kansas City. He is such a valuable piece, and just because it's not the sexy thing, right? It's not home runs, but he doesn't strike out a ton. He does a lot of the little things well. He's a very, it's almost like David DeJesus, right? You need those guys on your team. You need someone who can count on game in and game out, and I think Benintendi fits that bill. I would love to see a long-term extension with him in Kansas City. Is Carlos Santana going to be traded, or is even this just incredible stretch enough for a team to trade for him after seeing what he's done over the past, I don't know, 2.5 seasons?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I know what happened with Jorge Soler last year. So, you know, he was terrible for 2.5 months, and then for about 2 weeks he got on fire, and then that was enough for the Braves to give up an A-ball reliever for him, which, you know, and that guy's now in AAA, so we'll see if that ends up being anything. Santana is a little different that he's been bad for like a whole year and is just now kind of catching on fire. And he's so old. He's just, you know, Jorge Soler at least is a young man. Santana is old, which, you know, you tend to think maybe he's at the end of his career here. And so it's possible they trade him. I think the other thing is that he makes, you know, a significant amount of money, $10.5 million this entire season. The Royals would probably have to pick up at least, you know, most of that, if not all of that, to get any kind of deal. And under the old regime, under the Glass family, that wasn't something they did. We'll have to see if, you know, John Sherman and his ownership group takes a different approach. And I think there's reason to think that perhaps that they would. I thought it was an impossibility a couple weeks ago. I still think it's kind of a long shot, just because, I don't know, like, if I was a contending team right now, I'm not sure I'd be like really excited about getting Carlos Santana. But, you know, if you need a bench bat, I guess, you know, there may not be a lot of other options out there. And if teams start getting a little desperate, then maybe they start turning to the Royals and say, look, we'll give you an A-ball reliever for Carlos Santana if you pick up the rest of the contract. And maybe the Royals say yes to that. So it's at least a possibility, whereas two weeks ago I would never have entertained the thought.
When do you think Vinny Pascantino gets the call up?
Last week, man. I don't know, man. I thought by the end of this, you know, by about this period, he'd be up. And then maybe they're waiting for Carlos Santana to get traded or released or whatever. But it's way overdue. And, you know, and he's starting to slump a little bit too now. So you kind of wonder, like, you know, what's his mindset right now? Because he's kind of done everything they've asked of him, right? Like, you got to be in AAA saying, like, okay, man, what more do I have to do? I'm just tearing the cover off the ball. I lead the minor, or, you know, the AAA and RBI, and, you know, hit all these home runs and walks, and I'm not even striking out, and I can't get the call. I think, you know, what Les Norman was talking about it, and you know, he's talking about how it really messes with you as a minor league player. You see all these guys getting called up, and you're putting up the numbers, and you're not getting the call. And, you know, I really think that rewarding performance, regardless of your pedigree, regardless of who's blocking you, matters. I mean, I think it sends a message to guys that you know, if you perform, you're going to get a chance, and gotta be a little frustrating to not get the chance. Now, he probably just has to be patient. He's gonna get his chance eventually, but I don't know. It feels like if Santana hadn't caught fire these last couple of weeks, I think maybe we would have seen a move by now. And now that he's caught fire a little bit, that may delay Vinny getting called up. But I don't know. Maybe it's not till, you know, end of July when they do or don't make a trade for Carlos Santana, but it's already a month overdue.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real here. The Royals don't always do that. They seem to fall in love. They tab guys that they love, and they'll move them through, but other guys just can't get that call up no matter what they do in the minors. Frank Schwindel was the perfect example. He was absolutely raking in the minors, could never seem to get that call, finally did, and then was basically immediately traded. I have an idea for you. Hear me out. If you want to see some fans at Kauffman, Rudy knows where I'm going with this. Rudy back here is already laughing, making fun of me. I've talked about this for the past like 2 days now.
I almost asked this question to Lesky last night. But
you should have.
But I was like, Sterling's going to talk to him at some point. I'll let him ask that.
So hear me out. Lo Kane was released. You sign him to a one-day, a week-long contract, whatever you want to do. You trade, DFA, whatever you have to do with Carlos Santana. Bring it. 136-year-old in for the other one. You sell tickets for those games, right? For Lo Kane back in town, the farewell tour. Royals are going nowhere, right? They're not going to win any games. Might as well have some fun with it. Promote Lo Kane. Lo Kane Day. They probably still have some jerseys back in the shop from when he was still here. And then when you DFA Lo Kane, you bring up Vinny Pascantino. Boom. Problem solved. Dayton Moore looks like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I'm on board. I mean, Lorenzo Cain is one of my favorite players in the last 10, 20 years, and I'd love to see him come back. I don't think he's got anything left in the tank. I mean,
no, he's got nothing left in the tank, but he gets one hit, you pull him out of the game, everyone gives him a standing O, he looks like he went out on top here, and then you call up Vinny Pascantino. It's a win-win-win.
There you go, it's kind of like the nice transition from old, you know, the last generation to the next generation.
Symbolic,
kind of nice,
too.
Nice little handoff. Yeah, I'd love it. I mean, I'd love to get Kane the ovation and send-off he deserves. Just a class act all the way. I loved watching him play defense out there. I'd love to see him just, you know, glide in the outfield one more time and make a nice catch. But, yeah, I think I'd be thrilled to see that just for one weekend. And it's weird. You know, baseball teams don't seem to do stuff like this. Back in the day, they did. Back in the 50s and 60s, they do sentimental stuff like this all the time. And, you know, just to put butts in the seats. And I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe attendance isn't that important anymore. They have these, you know, big TV deals, and it's just like, well, we don't care if people show up or not. But, yeah, I'd come out to see Lorenzo Cain on a Friday night. Like, you know, I don't know if you'd sell out the stadium or anything, but you'd get more fans than you normally would on a random Friday evening game. And so I don't see why. Yeah, I don't. It would take up a 40-man roster spot. You might lose Carlos Santana. Oh, no. So, you know, like, it makes some sense to me, but I don't know. We'll see. The Royals are kind of sentimental. You know, they brought back, you know, Greg Holland, Wade Davis, so Alcides Escobar at one point. So, maybe we'll see it. I don't know.
Well, hell, Eske's still playing for the Nationals. He might still find his way back here whenever he gets cut from the Nationals. Who knows? What do you make of the Bally Sports 1999 watch every Royals game deal?
So I guess my first impression was that it does seem priced a little high.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
for this product.
Paramount, a lot of these other streaming services are, what, $10, $15, and you get a huge library of content, whereas this is just, you know, one team and what, you know, Oklahoma City Thunder games.
You got sand volleyball, I saw.
Yeah, World Poker Tour. So not a ton of content, but for someone like me, so I'm a cord cutter. I have a DirecTV stream right now to watch the Royals, but I don't really watch anything on except the Royals. And so DirecTV right now is like $89 per month. So this is a lot cheaper for me. Now, how many people are in my position? I don't know. But
wait, I got cable too. Max, I got cable too. How old are you? I'm 27 or 28, and everyone calls me ancient because I have cable.
No, I don't have cable. I'm a cord cutter, man. I'm 43. I got rid of the cable a long time ago and haven't looked back, but it's been hard to find Royals games, and this would be a great option. This would be a lot cheaper for me. Now it doesn't. I don't know if a lot of people are going to be willing to pay $20 a month to watch the Royals, but you know the price point I think kind of reflects how important live sports are to content providers. Like you can charge a premium for live sports because people will tune in, and I know people say baseball is dying, but baseball in the summertime still does very, very well in local markets compared to other programming. People tune in to watch their local nine. They may not watch national broadcast games or the World Series, but they will watch their local team. And so it wouldn't be surprising me if this is actually kind of a hit. Now, I don't know if the Bally Sports app will work. I mean, like, their channel doesn't seem to work as well as I would like. They have a lot of technical issues.
Yeah.
We'll see it. I guess it unveils. We'll see it tomorrow. I've got some hope that this will at least give people an option, and you don't have to take this option if you don't want to. But for people like me that are diehard Royals fans and don't have cable, it provides another option, and that, for me, that's great. Now, if you live in Iowa or somewhere outside of the Royals market, you know, you're out of luck.
Before I let you go, I have to ask the hard-hitting question, the question that we were getting into on Twitter last night, Lesky, Rudy, Briscoe, myself. It's about cookies. Basically, one, where do you stand on oatmeal raisin? And two, my opinion is chocolate chip cookies are the Derek Jeter of cookies. Very good cookie, but it's overrated.
Wow, that's a hot take. That's a really hot take.
Not great range.
My opinion on cookies is that, aside from like chocolate chip, they're pretty much all trash. Oatmeal raisin, man, that's just deceiving. You know, you think you're getting chocolate, and it's just oatmeal and raisins. You tricked me by being healthy. So I will say there's a special category, though, for Girl Scout cookies. Because they're laced with crap, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
I will eat any of those, and I could eat a whole sleeve of Samoas or Thin Mints and not look back. So I'll say anything Girl Scout cookies and chocolate chips, and you can the sugar cookies, the Snickerdoodles, even the what are they called, macaroons?
Mm-hmm.
You can leave all the trash for me.
That is harsh. I love Snickerdoodles and macaroons. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Okay.
Well, hey, we can come together. You know, cookie lovers and cookie non lovers alike can come together. That's what, you know, this Royals fandom bridges, you know, builds bridges between factions.
Max Reaper, editor-in-chief of Royals Review. Check out royalsreview.com. Check him out on Twitter at Max Reaper. Max, what do you have coming up next?
Oh, so I don't know, people have been kind of upset in the direction of the Royals. So we've been writing a lot about that. But, hey, the draft's coming up in a couple weeks. I don't know if people have been watching the College World Series. Certainly a lot of exciting players that the Royals may have an opportunity to draft at number 9 this year. The draft has been pushed back to July this year, so we'll be doing a lot of profiles of guys that are going to be available for the Royals, and so stay tuned for that. Also looking kind of what the Royals have done at the trade deadline in past years, and of course we'll be following all the rumors, Andrew Benintendi's rumors. We'll see if there are any Carlos Santana trade rumors. Maybe a couple of names too that may surprise. Maybe we'll see a Josh Staumont or Scott Barlow have some trade talk, so certainly follow us for any kind of trade talk like that.
Max Reaper, editor-in-chief, Royals Review. Take a quick break. The Homestretch here, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the Homestretch here, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, and Facebook Live. Can always get down with that song, Rudy. Good, you're doing a great job today.
I'm basically just, I realized songs that really will connect with Sterling is just basically the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. Because basically,
fun fact, never seen that. So don't even know what it is, really.
Okay, so the quick premise
is that like the little squirrel fox boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Quick premise is the main Chris Pratt, his character, when he gets kidnapped to space, the only thing he really brings along with him is a cassette tape with a cassette in it of a mixtape that his mom made for him. So he just kind of listens to the same songs on repeat, but it's all kind of it's all those songs, right?
That vibe, yeah.
And then
is that Norman Greenbaum or something like that?
Then he ultimately finds a second one that his mom left for him, and so there's more of them. But that, that's the soundtrack, So it's like, that feels like Sterling's vibe.
It's a good call. That or anything from Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
What a movie. Thank you again to Max Reaper of Royals Review coming on, breaking that down. The game last night was just incredible. A lot of things to look forward to if you are a Royals fan. Again, go to Royals Review, check it out. They'll be up to date on everything when it comes to the trade deadline. I like his idea on Andrew Benintendi. Do the old trade now doesn't mean you can't re-sign him in the offseason. If he's not going to want to do any trade talks at the moment, if he's, middle of the season, sorry, or not contract extensions right now in the middle of the season. Sorry, we'll do it once the season ends. You can't do that if you're Kansas City. Because if you let him walk and get nothing when he has been such a valuable player, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You're hurting yourself for the future.
Yeah, that's where I stand. Like, I like Benintendi a lot, and you know, left field is not a spot. You know, it's not like the Royals have all these outfielders in the minors, right? Even the majors. That too. You know, it's not like he plays first base where you're like, oh, you can let him go because you have Pescatino, you have Nick Prado. The Royals don't really have those guys in left field. It's just more of, if he's not willing to sign the extension right now, and if I was him, I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't either if I were him.
The free agent class is weak for the outfield. I would want to hit free agency. Not that he doesn't resign, but if he's not going to resign now, I think you have to trade him for something.
I also thought it was interesting that he brought up MJ Melendez as a permanent outfielder who can play catcher as well. I thought that was really interesting. I wanted to press him more about it, but we had too many things to talk about. Too many important things like cookies, right?
Got to talk about the cookies.
Wild cookie takes he had. I will stand by this. Chocolate chip cookie, the Derek Jeter of cookies. Good but overrated. Kind of just like the show. This is the Home Stretch here, ESPN Kansas City. Back in studio tomorrow, live from 3 to 4 p.m. We are out.